Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, registered dietitian, and former professional runner, Maddie Alm. Today's episode is a special episode in that it was recorded live from Geneva, Ohio, at the Women's Decathlon World Championships. You're going to hear from the event founder, Lauren Kuntz, and also a few of the fellow athletes who are competing. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Hi, everyone. Happy Friday. Welcome to this very special episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. This is the first time the podcast has been on the road, and this opportunity was given to me by Hedda's. So Hedda's, if you're not familiar, you may have heard about them on my podcast before. They are the shoe company that I will be training for the New York Marathon in, will be running the New York Marathon in. They're the reason that I'm going to be doing the New York Marathon. And they're an incredible company founded by women for women. They have created a very unique running shoe that was designed specifically for women's feet. So if you didn't know, most running shoes on the market, actually pretty much all running shoes on the market, were designed for men's feet and then made in smaller sizes for women. So what we see for women especially is that the way the shoes fit doesn't really make sense for our anatomy. So for me personally, what I've noticed is I used to get tons of blisters on my heels, and they've created a softer heel cup. So I have noticed way less rubbing, which if you have Achilles issues, these are great shoes for that purpose specifically. They also have a lower ankle collar, so there's no rubbing like on my ankle bones. And what is super unique about them is they're a little bit stiffer and they fit more like a glove, whereas I feel like a traditional shoe, you're really having to tighten them a ton. So they just fit so well. And it's so cool that they are not only, you know, a shoe company, but they're also trying to help push women forward in sport. So supporting events like this Women's Decathlon is something they do as a company. I'm running New York Marathon in partnership with Hedda's and Track Girls. So Hedda's is supporting Track Girls, which is a nonprofit organization working to keep young girls and women in sport. So they're not just a company that's about creating a shoe. They're also about empowering women, which I love. And that was kind of the theme of this weekend, was learning more about spaces where women belong in sport. I had the opportunity to go to Geneva, Ohio for the Women's Decathlon World Championships. And this is a super unique event because if you're not super familiar with the world of multi-sports or field, women traditionally compete in the heptathlon, so a 7-event multi-day competition, while men compete in the decathlon, which is 10 events over 2 days. So the women's event is 3 events shorter. It does not include the pole vault. It does not include the discus throw. Women traditionally run shorter events. So it's a little bit different. And you are first going to hear from Lauren Kuntz, who is the founder of this event. She's the one who organized this Women's Decathlon World Championships. And she has such an incredible story. She was a D3 All-American pole vaulter while she was at MIT. And she shares her story of how she ended up on the track team when she was traditionally going there to be on the gymnastics team. She loved the pole vault and wanted to compete in multiple events. So she ended up finding the decathlon because it was the only one that included the pole vault. And from there, she has been working really hard to create a space for women in this event, because as of right now, women are not allowed to compete in the decathlon at the national level. So this event is the first of its kind. The inaugural year was last year. So this is the second year that this has been running. And Lauren is just an incredible person and athlete. So I'm very excited for you guys to hear from her. She is a world record holder in the double decathlon and the indoor double heptathlon, and she's also a 3-time world champion. So very, very amazing, interesting person. She went on to grad school at Harvard, so she's incredibly smart. She is also an energy startup founder, sold her company, and has been really putting all of her time and effort into developing the women's decathlon. So you're first going to hear from Lauren, and I hope you enjoy hearing her experience, how she found the sport and why it's so important to her, as well as her experience with fueling in the world of multi-sports. All right, Lauren, welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast. We are here in Geneva, Ohio. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for having me on.
Yes, this is so fun. I'm sitting with a coffee in my hand that Lauren got me. This couldn't be better.
Yeah, it looks like beautiful weather for the weekend, so fingers crossed. It should be a great competition.
Yeah, we're really excited. And speaking of the competition, tell us a little bit about what this is and why we're all here today.
Yeah, so we're here for the 2025 Women's Decathlon World Championships. This is a athlete-organized world championships because women still to this day are not allowed to do the decathlon at international, global, or Olympic meets. So after many years of pushing and trying to change minds, we got fed up and said, why do we need anybody else's permission? Let's just organize our own meet. So we're here with amazing competitors from all over the world who are going to be doing 10 events over the next 2 days, a mix of running, jumping, and throwing, all in a quest to be crowned the world's greatest athlete.
Amazing. And for people that don't know, honestly, myself included, can you explain the difference between the heptathlon and the decathlon?
Yeah, absolutely. So both are really intended to be a all-around of track and field. But the heptathlon is what women primarily do. It's 7 events, so it's a shorter event than the decathlon. It's 4 events on day 1, 3 on day 2, and it has removed many of the more technical events that the decathlon has. So there's no pole vault in the heptathlon. That is a really fun and incredibly hard event to learn. There's no discus throw, which is another really challenging technical event. It also caters a lot more to sprinters, right? So the longest event that you have in a heptathlon is a 800 meter versus the decathlon, you have a 1500 meter run. And the other difference there as well is the heptathlon, they finish the first day with a 200. So again, very, very sprint based. The decathlon, you finish with a 400. So you will hit lactic and you will be in pain at the end of day 1 in a decathlon.
Wow, yeah. I've only done a couple 400s in my time, and those are tough events, but easier for someone like myself than the 200 for sure. So I'm interested to hear a little bit about how you got into this multi-sport world. Tell us about your intro into track and field and how you found your way here.
Yeah, I was a very late bloomer when it came to coming to track and field. I actually grew up as a gymnast. So the dream had been to do collegiate gymnastics. And when I got into MIT, that actually was possible. It was the only school I'd applied to that had a Division III gymnastics program at the time where I could go and do gymnastics. And then literally 5 days before you had to commit to a school, they cut the gymnastics team. And I had fallen in love with MIT at that point, and I was just, like, completely devastated, because I was like, my dream was in my hand. I was about to go fulfill this thing I'd worked my whole life for, and it was falling apart. And I'm an incredibly stubborn person. I just decided I was still going to be a collegiate athlete. So I emailed every single coach at MIT.
Wow.
And I was just like, I've never done your sport, but I promise I work super hard and I'm athletic, like, could I walk on? And the only coach that got back to me was the track coach. And he was like, you know what, gymnasts generally can be good pole vaulters. Why don't you come? So that's how I got into track and field. Probably very different from how most people get into track and field. But I was only a pole vaulter to start. And it still bothers me to this day that coming into the sport at 19 years old, not having a background in it, and just being introduced to this world, I never questioned the fact that I could pole vault, and I had teammates that were decathletes that pole vaulted, but my female teammates that did multis didn't pole vault, and, like, I couldn't do a heptathlon because of that. I couldn't do a decathlon, rather. Like, I couldn't go do 10 events. I just didn't question it, and it wasn't until I was volunteer coaching in grad school and I started actually coaching decathletes and going to the meets with them and going through all the events with them. I mainly was their pole vault coach, but I, like, became their mental health coach for all the other events. And that's when I was like, wait, how can I coach you guys in something I myself am being told, no, you can't do? Mm-hmm. And that for me was really what kind of catalyzed me to get into the multi-events. I convinced the coach I volunteered with to teach me all of the events I didn't know because he was the full decathlon coach, and he did. And we found a meet in Vermont that was for high schoolers, all genders, and they're like, anybody can come do a decathlon. So I was like, great, gonna do it, been training hard. So me as a 26-year-old was out there competing with high schoolers in this rural Vermont area. But it was great. I fell in love with it. And I just really wanted to see this continue to grow. It's been, at this point, almost a decade since that competition, and have just kind of gradually been getting deeper and deeper into it. Athlete was the first one. Started helping organize some of the just U.S. championships that early on we were having. And then last year, it was just like, why don't we play bigger? Let's go world championship. Let's do it.
Amazing. Wow, that's so incredible that you just kind of saw a gap and you filled it. I think that's something I love to talk to athletes about. A lot of athletes, as we all know, are very much go-getters. A lot of us, yeah, like you said, are stubborn. We're not going to take no for an answer. If there's something missing, we're going to find a way to fill it, which I love. I think that tenacity is what makes us good athletes. And you have some very unique accolades to your name. So world champion, tell us what those events are that you are a world champion in.
Yeah, so in addition to the decathlon, there's another event that also excludes women. It's not officially a World Athletics event, but it is a icosathlon, or a double decathlon. So just like there's a marathon and an ultra marathon, there's a decathlon and this ultra decathlon. So in my journey of like trying to get women in the decathlon, I stumbled upon this version, and I was like, this is bullshit. Why in this like absurd niche, crazy event are you not letting women in? Like, if you do this event, you are legit crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't do it, because it's every single track and field event over 2 days, right? So you're doing the 100 dash through the 10K, you're doing steeplechase, like, you're just, it's just dumb. And I love
every event.
Every event, right? Hammer throw, discus throw, javelin throw, steeplechase, hurdles, 400 hurdles, like everything but a relay. Wow. You are doing in 2 days.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I've done every single track and field event. But this was like a little side quest on my journey for the decathlon, where I was like, you know what? A few women historically, like maybe 8, had ever done one. So there was a world record, and I was like, okay, I'm going to gain some attention for this. I'm going to go break this world record. I'm going to prove women can do it. I'm going to try to change this smaller version of our sport in hopes that it can lead to bigger changes at world athletics level. That was its own long side quest, long journey. There was lots of being told, no, you can't do this as a woman. Eventually, actually, I had to organize my own meet for that because they wouldn't let me in. Broke the world record. Finally earned the right for women to be allowed in the world championship. Won the world championship title for that, as well as also broke the world record for the indoor version and won a world title for that as well.
An indoor version?
Yeah, the indoor version is only 14 events over 2 days. It's a lot easier, actually.
I'm hoping there's no 10K in the indoor.
No, yet in a 5K. It's way better.
Wow, so you don't meet many people who have done a 10K and a steeplechase and a 100-meter dash and hurdles. That is super unique, and all of those sports have such different requirements. How do you even go about training for this multi-sport event?
Yeah, it was an undertaking figuring out how do you train for this, right? Because you have to be a sprinter, and you have to be capable of surviving all of this mileage over the course of a weekend. And for me, I ended up naturally being a middle distance runner, I think, right? So I leaned pretty hard into that and leaned very hard into that for my training, where I train a lot more, probably like an 800, 1500 meter runner. And we just kind of add in enough long runs here and there that I have confidence that I will survive a 10K. It'll never be good, right? The 10K is the last event. So by event 20, it's never going to be good.
That's cruel.
It's cruel, yeah. It's not going to be pretty, but you got to survive it. And then try to just keep in enough speed of at least one speed workout a week that I don't lose all of my speed in the 2 and the 1. And then you're mixing in probably a lot more plyos than you would normally see in a middle distance runner to keep the jumps. And you also just recognize you're not going to be great in everything. I'm a terrible thrower. I will forever be a terrible thrower, I think. It does not matter how much I practice or do not practice the throws. It, like, legit doesn't get better or worse. So, like, for those, we're just kind of like, cool, we'll do it once or twice at this point before the meet, and, like, it'll be the same as if I trained it really hard for 6 months.
Wow. So what is, like, a weekly mileage count look like for you in your training, and how do you balance that with, you know, the strength piece and the speed and the plyos and all of that?
I keep my weekly mileage relatively low because I'm not doing a ton of just easy runs, right? So almost the majority of my mileage is going to come from workouts or running to the track to do the workout and running home. Like that warm up cool down is where I get a lot of my mileage. So I'm generally probably in the 30s, below 40 almost the whole year. As we get closer to the event, that'll drop. I'll drop down to the low 20s. But yeah, I think compared to somebody that is even a 1500 runner primarily, like that's not much mileage. And we just lean more into the like, keep the speed, run hard, run fast, do the hard workouts. And over the years that I've been doing this, you've built up enough of a base that you're okay. For the lifting, that one is always tough because I do all of this on top of having a full-time job. So that one is probably, unfortunately, the first one of like, if I have to cut, something gets cut. But I do try to make sure I'm lifting at least 2 times a week. That one focuses probably a bit more to like what you would see in a jumper sprinter, where it's a lot more of the powerful Olympic movements. I am probably doing more weight there than you would see a runner do. I am trying to push that weight as opposed to doing 10 reps. I'm generally sticking to like 3 or 5 reps, heavier weights. But yeah, it's all kind of a piece of the puzzle. I wouldn't say we necessarily have figured out the right way to train for these, but it's the way that's worked for me.
Amazing. And along with that, fueling has to be such an important component when you're trying to do so much, not only within your training, but within your competition. So what was your first experience like with fueling for your sport, and what have you learned along the way in terms of what works and maybe what doesn't?
Yeah, fueling has been an interesting life question. I have not always had the best relationship with food. So we're at a point where it's a lot better than it used to be. But I also know I can't let myself obsess over it. So we have to be super, super careful when we're fueling about, like, I pay attention to a few high-level things, and I never, ever let myself get into the, like, nitty-gritty details because it's a slippery slope for my brain. So when I'm training, I pay attention a lot to just, like, making sure I'm eating enough, right? Like, I burn a lot of calories. I need to get food in. And I tend to not pay as much attention to like exactly what I'm putting in. I try to keep it healthy. I try to keep it balanced. I do pay attention to the protein I'm putting in because I am pescatarian. I only eat fish. So that means I have a challenge getting protein sometimes. But beyond that, if I am craving ice cream, I am having ice cream, right? Like at this point, I'm like, my body knows better than my brain what it needs. So I try to really honor and listen to it in the training period. In a competition, it is all about what are the calories I can get down in stomach, to be totally honest. I think in many ways, I view the fueling for this like you fuel for an ultra marathon, where I'm sure there's better ideal mixes of the exact protein, carb, fats you should be having, but I'm like, it's better for me to stomach something and know I'm not going to potentially puke it than it is for me to get that perfect balance. So I have a very strict, like, nights before competing, it is pasta with scrambled eggs and some vegetables.
Wow, that's a combo.
Yeah, it's an interesting combo, but like it works for me. Yeah. I know it hits the groups I need and like we go with it. And I also know I can get it anywhere in the world. That's the other fun one. And then day of, it is a lot of baby food. So I will bring, if I'm traveling abroad, I'll actually like load up on like the little baby food squeezy packages because it's going to be this whole foods just ground up. So I don't have to worry about it sitting heavy in my stomach. I love the ones that have oats in it as well because that feels a little denser. So I know I'm getting like nutritious food. It's going to be digested really fast and it's not going to sit heavy. So I love those. And then I have a few like go-tos of like peanut butter sandwiches. But it's really strategic about when am I eating because you almost always have a hard lactic race ahead of you at some point. So you're really thinking like, okay, I did the 100. I now have 4 events before I'm running a 5K. I can eat a little bit more. So I'll have a sandwich then. And then as you get closer to the running events, you start being like, it's going to be the baby food. And I'm going to do the stuff that's a little bit lighter and easier to keep down.
Wow, baby food. I haven't thought about it that way, but that makes sense. Like, you know, I have athletes eat applesauce sometimes. Like, that's basically what that is. It's like pureed fruits and vegetables and real foods, which is great. And I'm curious, with kind of the inequity in sport that you've noticed between the heptathlon, the decathlon, I've talked about this a lot to a lot of the guests on the podcast about how there's this discrepancy between expectations of men and women when it comes to body types and fueling. Was that anything you encountered earlier on in college?
Yeah, so my tough relationship food-wise was really college and into grad school a bit. And I don't know how my male teammates were talked to about nutrition or food. I only know from my own experience and the tendency of coaches to comment on female athletes' weight, what they looked like. My coach would talk to me about my other teammates being pudgy. Would talk to me about their food choices, of criticizing that they were eating bagels, that that wasn't a good high nutrition food and that it was not good for them. And I definitely went through periods of restrictive eating, never any diagnosed issues, but definitely periods where I was intensely calorie counting, limiting myself to 1200 calories a day while training full time, and like would have some periods of crazy weight swing of like, I think in 1 month I lost like 10 pounds.
Wow.
Would not do this endlessly because I think like in the back of my brain, I was like, this isn't great, but it would be like this oscillating cycle between getting obsessive about it, looking at the scale and seeing a number that I didn't like, and then like really restricting. And it was never something I like saw teammates do it. I think it was a lot more of just the implicit background conversation coaches were having, as well as just kind of what you see in the media of like ripped female athletes being the ones that have more sponsorship, and like there is a financial impact, I think, of it.
Yeah, it's so hard to hear from a coach and someone that's a mentor, someone that you trust, that you need to monitor your intake like that or monitor your body, or to hear them talk about other athletes' bodies. That's super hard to be in that kind of environment. And now that you kind of have come out the other side and you've created this incredible career in the sport for yourself, is there any advice you could give to younger athletes who might find themselves stuck in those uncomfortable conversations?
Yeah, I think I wish coaches would talk to me a lot about food being fuel. That really was never part of the conversation. It was always like good versus bad. And I think that is one of like, there was so much missed opportunity for education about how your body works, how to honor it, what it needs. And I do wish that athletes that were in that situation knew, one, it's not okay for a coach to be talking this way, right? Like that actually is medically wrong. not to mention like inappropriate, like that's not an okay conversation to have, as well as like one of the things I love about the Maltese is I've seen so many different bodies be incredible. All of our bodies are different. Everybody's built in a different way and every body has unique strengths and they're all going to look different because of that. And there is no one cookie cutter, this is the body that is going to help you reach your goals. And every part of that was missing from the conversations with, especially my undergrad coaches. The coaches I worked with in grad school, Brenner Abbott at Harvard, is just a gem of a human being. I adore him. He never, ever, ever would talk to us about that type of stuff. But I think it's also one of, once you have somebody in your ear that's put that damage in, it's hard to undo, especially when it happens when you're in a very developmental phase of your life.
Absolutely. And I think what I've even encountered is if somebody gives you an arbitrary calorie number, like 1200 calories, it is so hard to get that out of your head. Like I think someone once told me 1500 calories, which I know as a dietitian is nowhere near what an endurance runner needs or a high level athlete needs. Even still, I've been a dietitian for 6 years. Even still, sometimes I'm like, oh, I think I ate over 1500 calories. Like it'll just pop in my head without thinking about it. And of course I know enough now to be like, oh, you're good. Doesn't matter. Move on. But it does. It takes a long time to get that out of your head. And I think something that can help it click for athletes is when you feel better, when you're eating more and you feel better, it's like, oh, food is not the enemy. Food is going to help me. Did you have an experience like that? Did you learn that fueling helped you feel and perform better?
I feel like there were many, many moments as opposed to like one epiphany. Like even just this past year leading into this world championship for the double decathlon that I did, I focused more on protein and I just started being like, oh man, I'm getting stronger, faster. Like, whoa, crazy. Like, yeah, my body needed that protein. And that just, I think, has happened over the course of my training over and over and over again. Probably the biggest epiphany moment really just came from when I wasn't calorie restricting, I was just happier. I had so much more mental energy, even beyond like physical energy of just like, I was burning my brain and my emotions out so bad on top of my body when I was trying to calorie count, because I was just so critical of myself, that it's like, I couldn't enjoy anything. So it's like, I think coming to that realization after a few patterns of it, of like, oh man, like I am not a happy person when this is going on and I'm like a ghost acting and being around people, as opposed to when I let myself eat what I need, like I can fully be present. That was a pretty big one for me.
Yes, I talked to so many athletes about this, the food noise in the back of your head, the amount of energy constantly policing yourself takes up. I don't think many athletes realize how much that takes away from happiness and quality of life, and then by default, training and your ability to perform. You're going to perform better if you're happy, and you're going to be happier if you're fueled. You know, fueling and performance aside, just quality of life, that's such a huge, huge piece of it. And so now kind of being at this higher level, do you feel like paving your way, kind of creating this new space for women, do you feel like you're seeing more positive changes, more embracing of other body types in this sport?
I think at the multi-level, yes, by and large, right? Because the multi is, you're such a family in competition. And that's part of why I love it, is like, yeah, you're competing against each other. And yeah, you all want to win, but it is so hard what you're doing for 2 days that like, there's a little bit of like this trauma bonding that happens where you're just like, we're helping each other through. And you earn, like you've reached just the point of just so much admiration for all of your competitors. And like, that's the other thing I love, is like, you'll be great yourself at pole vault and terrible in shot put. So you'll watch somebody that's great in shot put and has a different body than you in shot put. And you're just like, I am in awe of you because I've been trying so hard to be as good as you at this. And like, you're amazing and beautiful and I love you. So I think that does really help so much to take away some of that background noise and like criticism of your own body and what it can't do. When you were talking about the background noise, the mm-hmm. food noise mm-hmm. and how being unhappy like does really impact your training, the other way I've really appreciated a coach frame it for me was like, you have a certain total life stress, right? And you are stressing your body a ton when you are working out. Everything else outside of that is also adding to your life stress, right? So if you're going through a really hard period of school, that's life stress. That's adding stress to your body and brain that it needs to recover from as well. And you only have so much capacity for stress, regardless of where it comes from. So I think a lot more in my training about that. And I'm really thoughtful of like, if I have a really tough period of work, we're scaling training back. And like, if there's something that I'm stressing over that I'm like, wait, actually, this is not something I can control or not something important or something about food, I'm like, don't add the stress. It's not worth it, because I am reducing my ability to do the hard stress workouts that actually will make me better.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because I try to tell athletes this all the time. Your body doesn't recognize the difference between types of stress. So if you're experiencing a lot of life stress, like you said, stress around fueling, your body's going to do the same thing in terms of physiological response every time. So it's going to be the equivalent of basically double the amount of mileage that you're doing, and your body's going to have such a hard time recovering. And so not just having that athlete mentality of, I have to push through, I have to make it happen, and acknowledging sometimes it's okay to back off and rest, and that's actually what's going to make you a better athlete. And for multi-sport athletes, recovery is such a key part of all of this. And I try to tell athletes this too, like, you're only as good as you recover. And it sounds like that's something that you've learned along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I honestly actually put more mental energy into recovery than I do food. Because for me, like, there's 0 point training hard if I'm not going to give my body the time and space to recover and actually adapt from that workout. The benefit's gone if I don't do that. So I have a few non-negotiables, and 8+ hours of sleep every night is one of those, right? Like, I need it. And I don't feel guilty at all for getting it. Like, it makes me a better person, a healthier person, a happier person. Like, I need it. I'm giving it to my body. And I also am not afraid of, like, if I'm tired or if I've had a hard day of work and I am like, I can't do the planned workout, I tell my coach, we change it. And, like, I've learned to be totally cool with that. Me of 5+ years ago would have been like freaking out of like, oh my God, it's not the plan. It's not plan A. We're like doing the wrong thing. And I think now it's just like, no, there's so many ways that you can still be successful. And it's about learning how to meet yourself where you are in that moment.
That's such amazing advice. Like, I definitely, I think as runners and athletes, we're that type A perfectionist. If you tell us to do something, we're going to do it. It doesn't matter at what cost. And I think realizing that, like, you have free will, you have control, you can say to your coach, hey, I don't feel great today. Can we adjust? And I know sometimes collegiate athletes, it's a little more difficult. Sometimes, like, professional athletes, it can be difficult. But advocating for yourself and what your body needs, you're the only one who knows. And you're the one who's on the start line at the end of the day. It matters the most how you feel. So that is definitely a huge thing. Like, for me this morning, I was going to go on a run. I got 6 hours of sleep because I traveled. I never get 6 hours of sleep. And I was like, you know what? It's not worth it. It's not worth it. And I agree. Old me would have panicked, but new me is like, you know what? This is smart. This is actually what's going to make you a better athlete.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is one of the things for me has helped with the multi-events. And I really wish, especially young athletes, did more of the multi-events for this reason, is like, you could have been like, okay, cool. I only had 6 hours. I can't go on that run as planned. But for me, I could be like, okay, well, I can still go throw shot put for a few, like get 10 throws in, right? I can still go do something that my brain can be like, check, that was productive, but is a totally different stressor impact on my body. So like that mix for me of the tough on your body versus technically tough gives me a lot more pathways that helped me mentally get to the point where I am now, as opposed to, I think, I give you massive applause for being able to get to that point. I think if I had done that purely as a pole vaulter, purely as like a single event athlete, it would have been way harder.
Yeah, it certainly does put more pressure on each day if you're just doing one thing and you're specializing in one thing for sure. It does make it a little bit harder, but I love the idea of, as a younger athlete, trying new things, trying multiple things, and acknowledging like there are some things you're going to be good at, there are some things you're not going to be good at. But I love what you said earlier about just appreciating your body and appreciating your competitors. That's something I noticed, like in college, the heptathlon, every time they would finish, they would all be like doing a group hug and, you know, crying for people that medaled or podiumed or whatever. And it just seems like such a special sport. So if there's anyone out there who's interested in getting into multi-sport competitions, any advice for them?
Absolutely try it. Even if you're on the fence, come try it. It is a beautiful, wonderful community, as you were saying. There's so many times that I myself have done this, and people have done it for me, where you'll be going into the final event and be like, I've had a terrible meet. Like, I'm not going to PR, but I'm going to finish it. And I'll talk to my other competitors at the start line. I'm like, okay, who needs help on a 1500, right? And I've helped pace people to an American record. And I have myself been paced to, in my world records, it was friends that came out that did a full double decathlon with me for the intent of helping pace me in certain events, right? Like, they finished the whole thing, but like there were certain events where they're like, okay, I'm your 5K guy. I'm running this whole thing with you at the pace you need, right? And that community is just throughout the multi-events. So it's like, come give it a try. It is a beautiful group of people that are going to support you in your first one, all the way through if you're 90 years old coming out to try this. You're going to be supported. There's lots of different meets out there. This one here, actually, we have open divisions. So we have an open decathlon. Any young women, old women, any ability, done track before, never done track before, you want to sign up for a decathlon? Cool. We can teach you day of all the different events if you want. We also have even lower barriers to entry for the multi-events. We're trying out what we call triathlons. So some come give multis a try. It's one running event, one jumping event, and one throwing event. And it's really, again, designed to say, hey, anybody is capable of coming to do this. Those triathlons are open to all genders. We plan to do them in every future event as well. Again, with the goal of just saying, join the community. Come see if you like this.
That's amazing. And just kind of wrapping up today, what does this event mean to you? And what does it mean to you to be creating this space for women in sport?
Yeah, it means so much. There is a lot of labor of love that goes into putting this event on. I am not going to lie. And it is just always such a joy and privilege to be here and feel ownership of, like, this is a space I created for these women. Like, these athletes are truly amazing. Their stories are incredible, and they deserve a platform. So to feel like you're helping elevate them and put them on a platform is really just unbelievable, because they deserve more than I'm capable of providing, but it feels like a step in the right direction. I think as well, I view sport as such a lens for commenting on our society. And I think forever, when you have this discrepancy between men do more, women do less, you are sending a message to young boys, young girls, old boys and old girls as well, all over the world, that there is this inherent difference in capabilities and what is not valued. And that's a problem. I think it may feel small to some people who are just like, why do you care so much about this? But I'm like, it does more broadly impact how people see the world. And I will say, I've noticed in the 10-ish years I've been doing decathlons, a change in mindset of, like, I was always incredibly welcomed by my male counterparts, right? Like, they are really lovely and wonderful and have made it such a good welcoming space for me. But when I first started doing decathlon, it was like a lot of surprise of, like, a lot of them being like, but why do you want to do this? I'm like, well, why do you want to do it? You're here too. Like, why are you asking me that question? You know? And now a lot more of them come up and they're like, it is so awesome that we have women joining us. Like, it is great what you're doing. There's less of this surprise to it and more of like a, how do I help you build more? And I think that alone to me is like, yeah, this is proof that there is this mindset impact implicitly that happens under the surface when we don't think about the consequences of having these differences.
That's amazing, and it's incredible what you're doing. Thank you for creating this space for women. Women belong in sport. Women belong in all spaces. So keep showing up. Find ways to make it happen. If you feel like you're in a place where it's not happening, be the change. Be the change you wish to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Never wait for permission to be the change.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Lauren. This has been fantastic. If people want to keep up with you, where can they find you?
Yeah, so for the Women's Decathlon, the best way to keep up is to follow us on Instagram at Women's Decathlon, as well as me personally, athletically. My Instagram is, that's all it's about, is my athletics. So that's at @low_Koontz.
Amazing. Thank you so much, and good luck in your competition this weekend.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed hearing from Lauren. Like I said, she has such a unique and incredible story, and it's been really fun just to learn more about her and the Women's Decathlon and why it's so important. And now you guys are going to be hearing some live interviews that were done trackside at the actual event, so the days of the competition. So you're going to hear from several different athletes, one from Ecuador, one from Canada. We had an interview with a couple of the French athletes, but unfortunately we had a major audio issue, so I wasn't able to include that one, which I'm really bummed about. But generally, I would say the audio quality, we did our best, but we were outside. This was recorded live, so sorry if it's not the easiest to listen to, but I hope that you're able to hear from some of these athletes what it means to them to be competing in this women's decathlon, why it's important for them to feel like they're creating a space for women in the sport, and how they fuel themselves for multiple days of events. And some of their answers may surprise you. So I hope you enjoy hearing from these incredible athletes.
My name is Amanda Pascoe, and I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina.
And how did you get into the decathlon?
So I started track and field a while back. A lot of what got me into it was that my dad had done it, and he had a lot of stories about it. And when I tried it, I enjoyed all the different events, and I think that was why I liked it as compared to other sports and activities. And then I remember my dad told me at one point, you know, a lot of people, when they get older, they specialize. And when you see adults at these meets, they just have one event the night that they do. And I was a little disappointed because I was like, well, I like all the different things. Then he told me about Jackie Joyner Kersee, the current world record holder in the heptathlon for women outdoors. And when I heard that, I knew right away it was what I wanted to do and continued trying a lot of different things. I feel like I was very balanced across them. I think interestingly enough, my strength was actually a little bit outside the heptathlon events because I liked the long sprints, middle, even long distance. Javelin was a strong one, and I think because of that, discus and pole vault were also a little bit stronger. When I kind of learned more about the decathlon, I was like, well, that's kind of the ultimate all-around thing. Like, that's, the heptathlon's cool, but the decathlon is what I'd really love to do.
Amazing. And do you have a favorite event?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it depends a little bit on the season and what's going to come together that season and maybe on that particular day. I would say the most fun for me is probably pole vault, just because it's very cool to get that high in the air, even though there's a lot of ways I can improve my form. Have a lot of fun with javelin and high jump too. I think there's something very satisfying about the middle distance events because you're going hard for a long time, even though not everyone loves them.
Amazing. And some of those are specific to the decathlon. So what does it mean to you to compete in this women's decathlon?
Yeah, to me, it's a tremendous opportunity and honor. I think growing up, like, I love being able to do track, but there was a part of me when I saw the decathlon, I'm like, well, that's the coolest all around thing. Like, wouldn't it be cool if I could do that too? And sometimes it was a little frustrating, like in high school, seeing boys had some opportunities that girls didn't have, and I knew I could do and other female athletes could do. And to kind of be counting down, like, okay, when are they going to have this for women? And just being able to know that Lauren, someone I really look up to, had the initiative to put it together and not wait for anyone's permission, I think that's an amazing thing, and I'm so glad to be part of it. And I'm really excited for one day, like, maybe my daughter or like other younger girls, they're going to do a decathlon and that's the default and start it right when they're old enough. And I think that's super cool.
Amazing. And last question, what is your approach to fueling when you have multiple events across multiple days?
Oh, I appreciate your asking. So I am actually a sports nutritionist. There's a lot of detail to it. I think one piece of it is just the meals and knowing that carbohydrates are the preferred fuel of exercising muscle. So that is the majority of the plate. I think sometimes when you need a lot of carbohydrate, like I needed before double decathlon, for example, or a super long training day, have to be a little bit careful about the choices because big amounts of some carbohydrate might be okay. Other things might bother your stomach, and there's some nuances to that. I think when it comes time for during the day, a lot of times it's not so much traditional meals, but just what's going to provide you kind of sustained energy early, fast energy in the middle of the day. There's some supplements that are really evidence-based. And then if you're going to do something with like a little bit of protein, dietary fat, just kind of put it at a place where your body's got time to break it down. And then after, usually it's a little bit more of a balanced meal. But I think sometimes with like a really long day ahead, sometimes even there's a little bit more of the glycogen loading or carb loading. But I feel like there's more nuances than that. But I think it's a kind of a fun puzzle.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
My name's Katie Strauss. I grew up in Kirtland, so that's 40 minutes west, and I'm based out of Urbana-Champaign, Illinois right now. So.
Wow. All over. Okay. What got you into the decathlon?
In high school, I did the four events that were like the limit. Then I went to college, did the hep, saw the guys doing the deck, was like, I really want to do the deck. I love, you know, discus, pole vault, those look so fun. And I'd been searching for a while, and then I found it after I graduated, one in Mount SAC. I was like, I'm doing it. I don't care. I don't have a coach. And went and did it, and I just love it. And so then I'm back. So much fun.
Awesome. That's great. And what does it mean to you to be competing in this women's decathlon?
Pretty much a dream come true. Last year I was injured and watched, and I just love the deck. I love the atmosphere. I love all these ladies because it really feels like you're competing with a team rather than just competitors. It's not adversarial. Everybody's happy for each other. And to be a part of something that's trying to change opportunities for future women and current women and participate in that is just, it means a lot. And then it's super fun in general. So it's a 2-for-1.
Amazing. Oh, hydration. How do you stay hydrated on these hot days?
First, you start a week in advance. You check the weather and you start pushing fluids real far in advance. I am a big fan of drinking a lot in beforehand, trying to hit like 120 ounces. And then day of, it's Gatorades, Elementeer, Liquid IV. And then right afterwards, a large Pedialyte. And those are the big ones for me.
Amazing. Love to hear it. Well, good luck tomorrow. Thanks for chatting with us.
Thanks.
My name is Delaney Strauss, and I'm from Philadelphia, Missouri, USA.
Awesome. And what got you into the decathlon?
Honestly, my coach. I hadn't done the heptathlon, any multi-event, until I got him as a coach my sophomore year of college. I'm a senior now. I'm going to do my senior year. And I finished nationals in May. And he said, at like the end of my nationals, he was like, hey, what do you think about doing the deck, what your teammate Drew does? What do you think about that? And I was like, adding three of it. You know, I can't pole vault, right? And he's like, yeah, no, I think it'd be fun. What do you think? And I was like, okay, yeah, no, that'll be cool. And he goes, okay, great, you're in. So I think he already like submitted me for this before I realized it. Yeah. And then I was already in and he goes, okay, great, let's start working because you made it. So wow. Then this summer I had to learn how to throw discus and pole vault. And then I never ran an open 100, but that's just kind of like run fast, go straight. So
yeah. Wow. So a lot of people we've talked to, the pole vault is what got them into the decathlon, but you're the opposite. That's new for you. So what was it like learning a totally new event in such a short time?
The first two practices, I didn't make it to the mat. So we started baby steps. We started in the long jump pit. So I was just putting the pole in sand so I couldn't hurt myself. And then we had a few 5-hour practices. We just went out there all day, brought lunch, stopped, ate a little bit, got back up, kept going. And it was a long, hot summer of pole vault. But I think, I pray that it is not going to be embarrassing.
Amazing. Well, it's amazing that you're out here. And what does it mean to you to be out here competing in the women's decathlon?
Honestly, I know I very recently learned that, I mean, I knew it wasn't in the Olympics for women. So I very recently learned that this was like the next step to get it into the Olympics for women. And I think it'd be so cool to have a women's decathlon, like even it out, kind of separate the field, makes it a little easier for us to get in. So I think that's all super cool. Change is super cool. I know the athletic world is super, once they have it, they think that's the best.
Amazing. And last question, as a dietitian, how do you fuel yourself on these days with back-to-back competitions and in the heat?
Eat all the time. Eat when you can and what you can. I have so many snacks. Peanut butter is your best friend. Even if you can't get like bread down, just a spoon in peanut butter. I do that all the time. So that, and then I know you're not supposed to drink energy drinks, but I love Alani. So
whatever works for you. Everyone's different.
Whatever works.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much and good luck tomorrow.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rebecca and I'm from Ecuador.
Okay. And how did you get into the decathlon?
So my mom found it online and she was like, do you want to compete in it? And I was like, sure. Cause I used to do heptathlon. So I came here to do a decathlon for the first time ever.
Wow. And how did you get into heptathlon?
I wanted to do all the events since I began in track cause I was originally a thrower. But I always wanted to jump. So I was like, I want to do both of them. And my coach was like, you can't unless you do a heptathlon. So he signed me up and I liked it, except for the 800. But that's fine. We forget about those.
Amazing. And what does it mean to you to be competing in the Women's World Decathlon Championships?
It's really amazing, especially for what it stands for. Because we as women, we can do everything that we set our minds to. And I find it really interesting that they actually didn't allow us to do a decathlon before. And like, it's really good what's happening here because it's like raising awareness and making people realize that we can do anything. And we're actually doing it and proving that there are a lot of women who could actually be good at them. It's not something just men can do.
How do you stay fueled and hydrated for these days of back-to-back competition?
So I'm drinking a lot of water as well as Gatorade and different power drinks. We got a lot of power drinks in the kit that we got. So I'm drinking those as well, mixing them in water. And yeah, that's what I'm drinking basically.
And do you find that the food is different for you here compared to back home in Ecuador?
I think so. Mostly due to the fact that, well, I usually have like my parents cook me the food. So it's a little different. But I still have, I'm staying with a really nice lady who's really doing a lot for me. And like she's helping me have food and have nutritious meals as well. Not just like fast food or Mac or like different food that's usually like look as the normal American food.
Well, good luck tomorrow and thank you for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
I'm Kendra Leger. I'm from Canada, Ontario.
And what got you into the decathlon?
Oh God. I started my first hep this year. So we were just trying a bunch of different events. If anything, my coach was just like, let's just go do it. We haven't practiced for any of them. We don't have access to like high jump or like long jump pits or anything along those lines. So we got in there and like I medaled for my province and we're just like, you know what, like maybe we can mess around with this a little bit. And then I got an email from Lauren, and she's like, do you want to come try this? I'm like, holy shit, robots? Yeah, I guess. And here we are.
What does it mean to you to be competing in the Women's Decathlon Championships?
I mean, the biggest thing in this circumstance is that we're just developing women's sports, and that's something that I've always been super passionate about. Since I was a kid, a young girl, I've always been, like, playing with the boys and getting aggressive, and to be able to develop that understanding that women are strong and they can be in the same circumstances as men and throw ourselves in and just like compete like dogs, that is just such an honor for me to have a chance to do.
How do you stay fueled when you have back-to-back competition days with multiple events on each day?
So the first time I did a HEP, I did this horribly. I had like 2 gummy snacks after like 3 different events, and by the time I got to my last event, I was dog tired. So by the time we came here, we're like, okay, I need a different plan. So a bigger meal in the morning, at least 3 hours out, and then just snacking throughout the day, snacks that I know that are comfortable with my own body. Some people are different. I talk to a lot of different decathletes, and some people have really big meals, and some people have like just little snacks throughout the day, which was my idea of coming in this week. So we had like I used to call it baby food, but now they make them in like the applesauces and the squeezes, yeah. Yeah. And like different type of granola bars. I have to do gluten-free, so it's hard for me to find that. I do like rice crackers in order to get my protein in. We like carried around tuna and stuff like that with us.
How about hydration? How do you stay hydrated?
Oh God. So a lot of electrolytes. I keep a spray bottle around me, like literally spritzing myself through the day, but honestly, I'm surviving off caffeine. Lots of caffeine. That's obviously the opposite of hydration, but like it's keeping us alive right now.
Good luck in your final events today.
Thank you so much. I'm going to need it.
Thank you all so much for listening to today's special episode of the Fueling Forward podcast, and a special thanks to Hedda's, the shoe company that I am going to be running the New York Marathon in. They are the ones who brought me out there and had this amazing idea. They're great at supporting women in sports and women's sports in general, at being a shoe company that was founded for women and by women. So really glad to be able to be a part of this incredible event. Next week will be a Q&A with me, so if you'd like to submit a question to be answered on air, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.